If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hello and welcome. It's Friday and you're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, my own cryptid creature, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
It's a week gone by already.
Yes, it has.
Here's the deal for the weekend, folks. We will be back with you live next Tuesday with brand new episodes. We're taking Monday off for the holiday in observation of Memorial Day. So you've got Saturday, Sunday, Monday, no show. But Tuesday, we're back with two shows. You get our regular show and you get the True Crime Tuesday.
There you go.
So that's what's going to go on for next week. I just want to give you the heads up. But remember, tonight I am hosting Coast to Coast AM, the Jordan Codices. That's what we'll be talking about tonight. They're an ancient set of 70 lead tablets that could change the world's view of biblical history. And religious scholar and Egyptologist David Elkington has been focused on proving the authenticity of these artifacts. He's just back from Jordan, where he was detained for a month by authorities. And we're going to discuss his latest adventures in Jordan and why he believes the government there wants to suppress all the knowledge of what could be a huge game changer for theology. We'll also have 2 hours of open lines on tonight's show. And then tomorrow, I'll be hosting Coast to Coast AM again. Bill Burns, my guest for all 4 hours. We're going to talk about Roswell. There's some interesting developments, believe it or not, in that story. Huh. 70 years after Roswell, we'll talk about that with Bill Burns. And then Tesla versus Edison, the telephone to the dead. We'll talk about that later on in the episode. So that's what's going on Coast to Coast. You can find more information at coasttocoastam.com. coasttocoastam.com to find stations and times in your area. Or you can always go to knsiradio.com. knsiradio.com. That's our home for Coast to Coast AM and for Beyond the Darkness. We record from the studio in St. Cloud, Minnesota, and you can download their free app. And that way you can listen to the show and listen to Coast AM directly from there 7 days a week. So check it out. Get that for yourself. Tonight, Tim, as if Florida is not creepy enough, we've joked around about it. You know, I have some very fond memories of visiting Florida as a child.
Oh, yeah.
And even as a young adult. But the more I read about Florida, man, Tim, the more I read about alligators jumping into pools while people are swimming and poisonous snakes living in rafters. Oh, and it's terrifying. But there's a whole nother reason for me to avoid, Tim. Skunk apes, giant monsters, alligator men. That's just part of it.
Jeez.
Yeah, the cryptid creatures of Florida. We've got Scott Marlowe, who's going to be on the show with us this evening. He is proclaimed as America's most credible cryptozoologist. He spends much of his time in camos and boots, as he does in a lab coat and Oxfords. And he's a fellow of the Pangea Institute and educational consultant to the American Primate Conservation Alliance. Marlowe is the first expert in the field to succeed in establishing an ongoing college course in cryptozoology at a state institution of higher learning anywhere in the world. He's the author of Cryptid Creatures of Florida. We're going to talk about that and some of the research he's done in the Bigfoot and cryptid realm. So welcome to the show, Scott Marlowe. Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing great. It's a pleasure to have you back with us. I think you were with Darkness Radio a couple of years ago, and it's great to visit you again.
Yeah, I've been on Coast to Coast a few times with George, too.
Yeah, well, fascinating
stuff.
But I got
to take exception to something.
Go ahead.
it's not as creepy down here as you think. I mean, what's creepier than having a sea lion in BC pull a young girl into the water?
Right. I did see that piece of video footage that's out there. But I liken Florida to the Australia of America. Everything in Florida wants to kill you, from Florida man and woman to snakes, spiders, alligators, skunk apes. You've got all kinds of creepy stuff creeping around in Florida. Still a fun place to visit, but I don't want to live there, Scott. How long have you been a resident of Florida?
Longer than I can possibly imagine. Now, I was born outside of New York City, and within 2 weeks of being born, I was down here. My dad was a snowbird, and so we spent every winter down here since I was born, and I moved here permanently 25 years ago.
Well, what got your interest in cryptids and cryptozoology?
Oh, good Lord. Well, actually, it happened down here, believe it or not. I was taking pre-med at Rollins College in Winter Park. And one night I came home after nighttime classes. It was November, and I think it was like 75. And I lived the first time off campus. That's my sophomore year. And when I came home, things weren't quite right, but I lived – well, of course, back in those days, you know, our international airport was World War II era Quonset huts. Disney had just opened, and the town was nothing like it is now. So living on Semarand Boulevard was living in the sticks. You know, of course, now it's major highway, but it, you know, back then it was the sticks. And I had nothing around me but orange groves and forests, and, you know, it was way out in the middle of nowhere. Anyhow, came home one night and got out of my car after stopping at the grocery store, picked up a bag of groceries from the passenger seat. I had a little MGBGT. And when I stood up, I saw this bloody thing standing in a shadows off to the back end near the forest of the complex where I lived. And it turned out that it was a swamp ape. Of course, at the time, I thought it was a Bigfoot. I didn't discern the difference then. And that got me started.
Swamp ape. You saw, again, I love how people just sound so matter-of-fact. It was just a swamp ape. What the hell is a swamp ape, Scott?
Well, it's the southern Sasquatch. It's it may or may not be the same species of Sasquatch-type creatures you find out in the Pacific Northwest, you know, based on the track evidence. I personally don't think so, personally and professionally, don't think it's the same animal. I think it's a different species. But you got the cynics out there who say, let's find one before we think there's more than that. And, you know, so but I, you know, over the years, I've done all the research that I've done, and they just don't seem to be the same thing.
What are the telltale differences that you
have? Well, there's differences in height and size that are reported. It has a more sloping forehead down here. From time to time, when they're seen, they're reported with white around their eyes, which could be fur or could be skin. It depends on the viewing angle, I guess, or the sunlight hitting it or whatever. So, you know, some of them come off kind of weird looking that way. And, you know, the Bigfoot is just that, you know, the big hairy mass that looks like it weighs about 400 to 600 pounds and you know, is just enormous. These things look more human-like, but are, or shall I say, relic human-like. And are a bit more – are muscular but are somewhat more slender than the chunkier Bigfoot.
I'm going to ask a question, and I know I'm automatically going to take heat for this because it's down south. But could these creatures look different because of inbreeding population?
Well, anything's possible, but it's not very likely. They don't look like they've got microcephaly or anything like that. They just look anatomically different. And their foot tracks are different. You know, there's the classic Sasquatch track is more trapezoidal. These are more hourglass shaped, with the top being much larger than the bottom, and seem to be more adapted to life in water than animals that appear to be mostly terrestrial and you know, running around the mountaintops.
These creatures, when you saw this for yourself, you witnessed it. I mean, how quick of a moment was that for you? Was it a flash? Was it
minutes? This went on for a couple of minutes. You know, I was scared to death holding the bag and froze. You know, as it started showing a little more interest in the trash dumpster, which it had apparently been raiding, we attributed it to a, you know, nasty raccoon group in the complex, but it turns out it was probably this thing rooting through the trash. In any case, it was more interested in that, and it kept looking over at the dumpster, and I eventually got up enough nerve to start backing up towards the second story stairway, which was exterior, and eventually got up the stairs to my door, put the grocery bag down, and put the key in the lock, unlocked it, reached back down for the grocery, stood up, it was gone. So, you know, it's probably a couple minutes.
And once you've seen something like this, I mean, and there's no mistaken, it's not a quick flash out of the corner of your eye or something striding across the road that you get, you know, 2 seconds of a view. You see something like this. How maddening is it for you, Scott, to still be at a position where, you know, we don't have real evidential proof that these creatures do exist?
Well, remember, I was a pre-med major and trained from, you know, from the time I was in high school, I was trained as a scientist. So I know scientific method. I know what's required, but I also know what I saw. You know, I'd taken anatomy and all of that, and I was pretty darn sure I was looking at some kind of I knew it had to be a relic hominin, or it could have been some kind of undiscovered species. Of course, we've found so many different human-type species now in the fossil record. There's many open possibilities as to what it could be. All I know is it was very much covered with hair. That's pretty much all I could make out other than the whites of the eyes and the, you know, the basic outline form against this strange lighting we used to have called architectural lighting, where everything was just pools of light on the ground, and you didn't get the kind of ambient lighting you get today from the sodium vapor lamps. So, I mean, it was interesting, and it did change my life. I mean, I ceased pretty much to be interested in medicine at that point and became more interested in anthropology and spent most of my life thereafter trying to figure out what these things were. And everywhere I went, all the traveling I've done in the world, you know, this has been one of the things I've researched very, very quietly, because in those days you didn't tell people you saw stuff like this unless you wanted to be thrown in the booby hatch.
Right. And looking into these claims now, is this subspecies that you believe that you encountered, is this something that is seen in many different states, or is this something that's really kind of a Florida-bound beast?
Well, this particular type is seen around the Gulf Coast and even down into South America. You know, down, they have different names for it in the different colloquial areas, or, you know, colloquialisms for it. But it's not quite the same as what you see in the Pacific Northwest. As I say, now virtually every country on every continent, with the possible exception of Antarctica, has some kind of animal like this. Not all of them are as tall or as robust. Some of them look more ursidae, you know, more bear-like. Some of them look more primate or simian-like, or pogonite-like. So, I mean, it varies, but you know, I just don't think they're all exactly the same animal worldwide. I think there's several different kinds.
Now, when you bring that up, one of the other creatures that we've heard that's very similar is the skunk ape. Are the skunk ape and swamp ape the same creature, just an interchangeable colloquialism for it, or are they separate?
Yeah, it's the same animal. I just don't like the word skunk because they don't always smell like one.
Okay. All right. Is there usually some kind of pungent odor associated with these beasts, no matter what they are?
Nope. You know, I've seen it 3 times. Mm-hmm. Once here in Florida, twice in Texas, and 1 time in Texas was the only time I detected an odor. And it was, I mean, it was rank. It smelled something like a seafood restaurant here in Florida on a hot summer day of 100 degrees.
Oh, that sounds pleasant.
It wasn't.
Yeah, I can guess not. So you've seen this thing 3 times. Walk me through your other experiences, please.
Well, one time we saw saw it in the foliage when I was out with Chester Moore. I've been sworn to secrecy. I can only tell you it's the Big Thicket. I can't tell you where, because it's one of his major places. But it was the same location that he did a filming for X something or other, Animal X, that appeared on TV. And then he took us to another place that was nearer to his home in East Texas again. And we had an encounter using infrared scopes. And that was where I smelled it. And that was about 3 in the morning, late at night, way out in the swamps and the bayous.
Are they aggressive in nature, as far as you can tell?
Nope, more protective than aggressive.
Okay. And when you're saying protective, in what sense do you mean?
Well, they only start doing things like throwing sticks or rocks at you. One threw a stick at us the last episode there. But when we were getting close to what I assume was the family group feeding in a cane field that was behind where we were headed.
And did it follow with any kind of grunts or noises?
No, I didn't really hear any noises per se, other than what I thought was probably a wild boar. They circled us as we moved up the trail. We had a bayou on our right, and we had a raised hilly area on our left, and you could only go in straight, which we did. It was heavily wooded. They even hid behind trees. They apparently think we can see in the dark. And they certainly can. And we only saw it on the scope peeking out from behind the trees when we had the passive infrared scope.
Are we infringing in their territory? Is that why they're becoming more visible, do you think? Or is it just knowing where to look?
Well, I mean, that's happening with all kinds of animals.
Right.
I mean, we had a dead bear in the median strip down in Arcadia, Florida, just this week, that got hit by a car. And that's kind of rare. We've had two people have car accidents and motorcycle accidents hitting a gator crossing the highway this week, too. I mean, it just, we're moving into their territory and they got no place to go. So, yeah, they're becoming more visible simply because they have less area to disappear into.
Do you look at the Florida area and the type of cryptids that are being reported there? Is there more in that area because of the swamp area, do you think, than in some of the other states? Or why do you believe it's so much more active there?
Well, I think they like to be in places people don't go. So, and we have lots of places down here people don't like to be, so that's where they tend to be.
And how many different type of cryptid, cryptozoological type beings are known to wander Florida?
Well, in the book Cryptid Creatures of Florida, I've covered 23 of them.
23? Have more come to light since you did that, or?
Well, there's others that are more equivocal. There's lots of evidence for the 23 that I detail in the book. And then I wrote a semi-fiction based on another 4 called Weird... God, I can't even remember my own book now. I think I named it Weird Creatures or Weird Monsters, whatever. And that one just came out last year. But there I took information from sightings and from encounters that I've recovered, but there's not any physical evidence to really support the stories. So I told the story and then I added dialogue. And since not being there to hear the dialogue, I couldn't swear that that's what was said or what was done. So it's a semi-fiction book, but it's based on true encounters.
All right. Well, let's start to look at some of the culture of these creatures. And I know you did a book regarding Bigfoot in like artwork and paintings and such like that. But talk to me about these different beings. I mean, how much like eyewitness evidential proof are there for these different type of creatures in Florida? I mean, things that go back to artistic expression and cave paintings and things along that nature.
Well, there's all kinds of evidence. I mean, to put it bluntly, science has a different set of criteria than other people normally do. For example, we could probably prove that almost all the creatures that are talked about in my book, in a court of law, we could prove they all exist. In science, you can't do that. Science has a different set of criteria. People get upset with it all the time. I mean, I'm constantly getting into arguments with people over the science aspect of it on Facebook. They're constantly, well, take my word for it, but that's not how science works.
Right.
You know, it's not meant as a personal affront. You know, don't get your ego in the way. That's not how science does things. So, you know, think about how frustrating it is for me to have seen an animal three times, know what I'm looking at, and not be able to prove it to a scientific certainty. But I know what's required to do that.
Right. That's why I was bringing that up earlier, is how frustrating is that for you to be, you know, having seen this and know what it is that you're experiencing, what you're not mistaking it for, and it's still not taken seriously.
Well, and I mean, even within my own family, I've got a cute story. I know we have black Florida panthers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everybody says that's impossible, largely because they've never had one that they've caught. They've never had one that has been born in captivity. So everybody thinks there is no way that a Florida panther could be black.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, there are, jaguars and what have you in South America that are melanistic, but that's not what I'm seeing. I've raised from a cub a Florida panther. I bottle fed them. I know what they look like. I know how they behave. So when I say I have seen one, I've seen one. But, you know, and we had that happen where one walked across the path as we were leaving with our RV one morning with my son asleep in the deck above and another guy that was with us, asleep on the couch. And, I'm like pounding on the ceiling saying, look out the window, look out the window. There's a black Florida panther. Well, my son, missed it, didn't see it. And for quite a while said, hey, you know, these things don't exist, Dad. You were seeing things. On the way back from looking for a Florida panther black Florida panther called the Carabel Cat with Ken Gearhart and Lee Hales, cryptozoology and biology friends of mine that I've worked with for years, up in Carabel, we didn't see one after spending 4 days in the wild looking after recent sightings up there. But on the way home, my son's driving the RV behind me in the car. And we're driving down 471 outside of Lakeland, which isn't 20 miles from my home. And lo and behold, what jumps out in front of the car and almost gets clipped? A black Florida panther. Only this time I pick up the bloody – of course, I had to slam on the brakes to avoid hitting it. And my son's right behind me. And I pick up the cell phone and I call him and I say, did you see it? And he said, you mean the black Florida panther that just ran across the street and you almost got almost clobbered? I said, yeah. He said, well, I believe you now, Pop. That's how this stuff happens.
All right. These black panthers, first of all, there's anomalies that happen. You have Florida panthers, and there might be recessive genes or traits in some of them. Why is it so hard for them to believe that there may be a random black panther out there?
Well, it's not that hard to believe it. It's just that science requires certain criteria be met in order to be able to make a pronouncement like that. And many of them are so dyed in the wool with their dogma that there's no chance in hell they're going to listen to you unless you bring one in on a leash. I mean, that's just the way it is. I understand that. I mean, that's okay. But the genetics of this is kind of silly because there's no reason that you can't explain it with the genetics. If you've ever seen a panther cub, a newborn panther cub,
I have not. No,
they're black and gold spotted.
Okay.
All right. Now, as they age, they lose the black spots. And in the wild, down in South Florida, the golden coloration is really, really good camouflage for them against the sawgrass.
Sure, that makes sense.
Which is why they have that coloration.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they're moving around, and they're not limited to South Florida. There is Florida panthers that I have seen several times up in Carrabelle and up in the Panhandle, and there, instead of the grassland type swamps you've got, you have swamps with these big, deep, dark, bald cypress trees. And they're black to the ground. Mm. Well, you know, a golden panther is going to stand out like a sore thumb against that background.
Right.
So why is it that for some reason the gene that's there, because they already have black in the fur when they're cubs, why can't the gene simply switch so that the black turns on and the gold turns off?
That's fascinating.
It's a better adaptation for them, and they can and they have better camouflage. It makes sense for them to be dark colored.
Right.
So, you know, are there black panthers? I know damn well they are.
Now, are they oversized? Is there anything specific that's different about these, or are they just black panthers?
No, they're just black. It's like a black cat. It's a house cat that just happens to be black.
Right. Okay.
It's just melanism is just a fur color issue.
Let's talk about some of the other creatures. You've got some flying creatures in Florida that I want to investigate. Which one do you want to start off with?
Well, we can talk about either we've got a couple of really weird ones. You want to talk about the Thunderbird?
Sure.
All right. So we've had sightings of these enormous birds that are probably something related to a teratorn or perhaps some kind of enormous turkey vulture or condor or something in that family that show up here from time to time. We haven't had anything as dramatic as the Marlin Lowe thing, up in, Illinois, I think, where the bird supposedly swooped in and picked a 7-year-old kid up. But, you know, we have had sightings where the bird is just so bloody enormous. It's like a, you know, a mysterious island thing. And that's, you know, that's not a strange thing. I mean, they could be condors blown off, the California condors blown off course, or they could be a relic population of the teratorn, which was a prehistoric bird. We have them in the fossil record here. So if they survived, they could still be around, or some descendant of theirs.
See, that's what's so hard, I think, for people to wrap their head around, Scott, is that if these relic creatures survived, why is there not more proof? I mean, we find, you know, dead alligators by the side of the road. You find, you know, different creatures that shouldn't be in certain places. You know, they thought the coelacanth was dead forever, and here they find it. So why, you know, if these things are still out there, these relics, why aren't we finding more proof of their existence?
Well, we do, but we don't do it every day. And then again, you've got things that turn up that somehow disappear for some reason, like the red-haired giants from Lovelock Cave in Nevada.
No, I thought you that – right, go ahead.
I mean, you know, you get into the Native American Repatriation Act, and the government – you find anything like that, the government freaks out. Let's bury it. Let's get rid of it. And, you know, I'm constantly seeing articles, which are probably fake news, about the Smithsonian admitting that they've, you know, destroyed skeletons like that.
Right.
Why? Well, you know, what is everybody trying to hide if that's the case? What's the point? I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what to buy or what to scoff at. It just doesn't make sense. I know that the skeletons exist. I've seen them.
You've seen which skeletons?
For the red-haired giants.
And how tall are these figures?
Anything from our height to 8-9 feet tall. Some of the skulls are so large that you could fit a human skull inside one.
Okay. Well, we know, again, you know, as we've talked in the past, looking at the skeptical side of it, we know that there were, there's genetic anomalies that happen in every race and creature. So, I mean, we know that there are giants and people that have grown to be almost 8 feet tall or a little more. That's not so far and hard to believe. But again, why would they hide that, do you think?
Well, some of it is the nonsense that people start jumping to conclusions. You talk about a giant, and the first thing that happens when you're in the presence of a individual. And now I'm not slamming religion, so don't get me the wrong way. But the first thing they want to do, oh, Nephilim. Okay, do they have a sign around their neck that says that's what I am? I mean, you don't. You can't make those types of jumps. That's where you get into trouble. And because of all that kind of nonsense, people tend to keep information close to their vest and don't want to get into it. And to some degree, I can understand it. I mean, is Babadra or Namira in the Middle East, is that Sodom and Gomorrah? Show me a street sign that says so.
Right. I'm with you. All right. So the Thunderbird is one of the giant flying creatures. Is there any kind of mystical powers associated with these beasts at all?
Well, to the Native Americans, there usually are, but that's not necessarily so. They're just animals.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're seen rarely makes them special. And unfortunately, humans always want to explain everything. And can't deal with there's no explanation, so we make stuff up, which is exactly why science doesn't take it without the proper evidence.
All right, before we go to break, what's another one of the flying beasties out there?
Oh, we've got something down here called the Dixie Demon.
The Dixie Demon. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, that one's kind of fun. It's sort of like, but not exactly like, the Mothman from up in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. But this has a little bit more of a gargoyle-ish look to it. And, it seems to haunt the area around Chiefland and Fanning Springs and Old Town, Florida. It's been reported there a couple of times.
All right. And what exactly is involved in the reports and the stories?
Well, it seems to be somewhat hostile, although it doesn't really attack people per se. There's a story about it in my Weird Monsters book that is a true story based on a young redneck kid and his girlfriend who have an encounter with it. Apparently, it has a thing against watching people do the nasty out in the wild. So, I mean, they were out skinny dipping and having a good old time, and this thing apparently took exception to it and ran them off.
Okay. So, see, Tim, you can't even go procreate fondly out in Florida without something trying to get to you.
Damn.
I know. Isn't it terrible? You can't even, in Florida, you can't go all natural without insulting something.
Exactly. Freaky Friday, we've got more Freaky Florida coming your way. The Cryptid Creatures of Florida. Scott Marlowe, our guest. But before we do that, Tim's going to roll back the giant boulder before the Cave of Darkhives to go deep in to tell us another creature encounter here in the real-life tales of Theater of the Mind.
Theater of the Mind. Beware the Skies. Another real encounter shared by Ed Allen. It was a beautiful Florida day. Blue skies and a gentle breeze blowing kept the heat of the sun somewhat at bay. It was around 10:30 to 11 in the morning. I'd gone out to meet some friends for a day of play. I was maybe about 12 at the time and loved biking with my friends and exploring the wooded areas that led into the bogs and marshes that surrounded our neighborhood. We were young Indiana Jones-loving kids and couldn't get enough of the outdoors. On this day, we biked a little deeper than we ever had before, and abandoned our bikes to continue on foot. I used to carry a machete from our shed when we would go exploring, in case of running across a snake or some other local creature. It was a different time, and at our age, we were immortal, without fear of much. That was about to change, at least for me. Our journey took us about a mile into the wilds, and we had pulled up camp among some downed trees, catching our breath and getting a good sweat rolling now that the sun was getting higher in the sky and the humidity was rising. I recall talking about what it would be like if we ever found a dead body out here, like Stand By Me, the movie had explored. Now, most of us admitted it would freak us out and hoped we never would. In between small talk and laughter, our attention was drawn to a strange, creepy noise. Almost like a giant cat crying and mewing loudly. But a giant, giant cat. Now, of course, we were all familiar with Florida panthers, but none of us had ever seen one. The howling grew louder like it was in distress. We reluctantly decided to go see what was causing the sound. Curiosity had gotten the best of us. Slowly, we made our way through the thick wooded areas. The sound would suddenly stop, and so would we, waiting to see where it was coming from. Then it would begin again. We finally made our way to a clearing, and the sound seemed just a bit more in front of us, but no matter how far we walked in, we never seemed to get close to this. Then, the sky darkened. Something flew overhead. Something massive. The whole area shadowed by the sheer size of the thing. That's when the sound returned. A loud and terrifying screeching noise. The only way I can explain what we saw was to describe it like a pterodactyl I had seen in books in class. The only difference was, this had a longer, snake-like, thick neck. We were all shocked and horrified at the same time. There was no way we saw what we just saw. But there it was, circling the clearing and crying out. The first thing that popped into my mind was, what if that thing is calling its friends and we're on the menu? There was an unspoken knowing between me and my friends. We turned and ran with fury and determination to distance ourselves from whatever the hell we just witnessed. We did not yell. We didn't scream or cry out. Personally, I wanted to be as quiet and fast as I could to keep this thing from getting me. I could hear something crackling through the treetops as I ran. The only time I stopped was when my friend Parker tripped and fell in my path. I reached down, grabbed his hand, gave him a yank to right him, and reel off like a shot. My heart raced as I saw the area where we had left our bikes just ahead. I knew once we got on those bikes, we would get even farther and faster away. We just had to make it there. As we closed in on our bikes, the woods were filled with the screeching cry of the monster again. We grabbed our bikes, saddled up, and just as we pushed off to start the final leg of our journey, my pal Wally turned back to take a peek. His face told the tale. He was sheet white, his mouth hung open, and he uttered, "Oh, shit." That was all any of us needed to hear. We pedaled like madmen on speed. We finally cleared the woods altogether and down the dirt path that brought us this far. None of us spoke or looked back. We just rode like the wind until we got to my house, our bikes skidding to a halt in my carport. We dropped our bikes and ran into the house, slamming and locking the door. We ran to the front room, looked out the window to see if we had been followed. Thankfully, we were not. I count my blessings we got out of there. Even though I know what I saw, I still cannot believe it, understand it, or even believe my own memories. That day, our exploration of the woods and the bogs ended. Even to this day, I will not go back in there. You couldn't pay me enough, even with a machine gun. I don't remember ever speaking about this again with my friends until many years later. We all just kind of zoned out as we discussed it, our minds wandering back to that life-changing moment. Sometimes, late at night before I drop off to sleep, I can still almost hear that frightening cry, and I thank God for getting me and my buddies out of there in one piece.
Our guest today is Scott Marlowe. The Cryptid Creatures of Florida is the name of the book we're discussing today. He's written many books, and you can get them on Amazon.com. So why not use those banners to Amazon to go place your purchase? Again, we get a small percentage. Nothing is taken away from the author. Nothing is taken away from anybody else, and there's no additional charge to you for using that. So go check out The Cryptid Creatures of Florida right now by Scott Marlowe.
Beyond the Darkness.
Our guest today is Scott Marlowe. The Cryptid Creatures of Florida is the name of the book we're discussing today. All right, Scott, we're back. Fun story from Theater of the Mind of a cryptid encounter, but let's hear some of the other ones that are associated with the Florida region.
Oh, good God. I mean, what do you want to talk about?
Well, giant
alligators, chupacabra. Oh my goodness. Giant snakes. I mean, we got it all.
Well, let's start off with giant alligators. When you say giant alligators, how big are we talking?
Well, you're talking alligators that are over 18 feet.
Now, is there evidential proof of these beasts, or again, are these kind of the Moby Dick of the alligator world?
Well, I don't. Well, not exactly Moby Dick, because I don't know anybody that would play the Ahab to it. But
that's
anyway,
right.
Down here in Lake Wales, there is a Native American story about Kufkawalax and his battle with a gigantic gator that supposedly the ghost of which still exists and tries to grab you or your vehicle at Spook Hill and drag it into a nearby lake.
The ghost of the alligator does that.
Yes, that's the explanation we have here locally for this visual thing that goes on, which is just God, my mind goes blank anymore. I'm having senior moments. Actually, it's turning into senior everything's. If it appears as though you may be going uphill, or you think you're going uphill, but it looks like you're going downhill.
Oh, so it's kind of this optical illusion.
Yes, exactly. Optical illusion. There you go. There's the word. And it's very funny, because if you just leave your car there, it seems like your car will roll downhill if you don't put the parking brake on.
Uphill, you mean, right? It appears to start rolling uphill.
Exactly. So it appears that the gator is dragging you towards this lake, which is cool. But the gator was apparently enormous enough that it could swallow people whole. And Kufkawalax, who was the local Indian chief, did battle with it and knocked it off in order to save his tribe, which camped nearby. So that's kind of an interesting story. And from time to time, we do wind up having some pretty large gators. I mean, down along 441, which is the old alligator alley that used to go from Naples to Miami, I've gone down that way on a couple of occasions and seen enormous gators that were beyond belief in terms of size. One time we were riding through there, my kids and I, and we came across one that had been hit by a truck, and this gator was so large it almost went the entire distance between the left side of the road and the right side of the road. And you know how wide a piece of highway is, even a two-lane highway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just absolutely enormous, and the gator got creamed by a semi. Recently, there was a good piece in video. There's a ranch that's been turned into a reserve near me called the Circle B. And my son loves to roam the trails down there because he's a hiker. You've got this thing that looks like a dinosaur walking across the footpath there. And I mean, when I say like a dinosaur,
I've seen that video.
That thing is enormous. And these gigantic gators down here, we've got them. There's no question about it. They're there. And, and of course, that particular video has plenty of proof of it.
Now, what are the largest alligators that are known to exist?
I think the largest one here in Florida was like 16 feet that they've documented.
And then how old does that go back to? Do you know?
Well, theoretically, they just keep getting larger and larger as they get older. So, I'm not sure what the lifespan is, especially down here since people like to hunt them. They're not much good to eat once they get above 3 feet. Gator tail is very popular down here. So, they're harvesting them all the time.
Whew. So, giant alligators, Tim. Add that to the top of the list of why I will never return to Florida now.
Gator's good eating.
Your son's walking these paths, sure. And there's a giant dinosaur gator out there, Scott.
Yeah, well, he can take care of himself. I'm Indiana Jones when it comes to snakes. And they just had a snake hunter down here take his 50th of this season out of the Everglades of these giant boas or pythons or whatever the hell they are down there. And those things just completely freaked me out. I hate snakes.
Oh, I'm with you. Really, on that.
I really hate snakes. And when the news first started coming out, the Orlando Sentinel did a story on them. We went down there and were talking to a couple of the naturalists at the Everglades. One of them took us over by my mahogany hammock down there, and I blurted out a question about the gigantic snakes, and oh no, we're not really having any problems with them down here. It's no big deal. As he stepped on one.
How big?
Big enough to have swallowed the guy.
Oh no!
I mean, that damn thing was enormous, and and of course I jumped up on the bloody boardwalk like there was no railing there. I must have flown up there because I just have a thing about snakes. So anyway,
yeah. And how about the video footage of the snakes? The giant snakes that are torn open from trying to eat the giant alligators.
And that just happened down there at the observation platform in Shark Valley, which wasn't all that far away from where we were.
No, thank you. Chupacabra, let's go to something that's creepier and I can imagine doesn't really exist. Do you guys have many cases of the chupacabra in Florida?
We got a fair number of them. I suspect that the chupies that are being reported are actually some sort of hybrid canine, because most of the skeletons that have been presented to me saying what is this appear to be canid, and so we know that they're here. I've seen coyotes on trail cams, so. But these things are apparently interbreeding with certain dog species or other wild canids and developing some extremely strange looking, almost hyena like canid creatures that are being attributed to being the chupi. And we were even seeing those in our backyard. I mean, it's the orange groves around here report them constantly.
But isn't it strange, Scott? I always thought the chupacabra was some kind of like a horned, lizardy-looking, three-toed creature. How did it go from that to mangy coyotes?
Well, I mean, it takes various forms. In Central America, they appear, the description is more gargoyle-ish. In the islands, it takes on a completely different form, and it's more ghostly. Some people even report it has wings. It's just about anything that preys on anything, based on the Hispanic population around here.
I think that's part of what does the cryptozoological field such a massive disservice, whether it's, using incorrect terminology or, defining these creatures. It doesn't seem like there's much of a consistent,
you've got that problem. To some degree, but you've also got the problem of the hoaxers.
Right.
I mean, let's face it, this particular field lends itself to hoaxes and to the jerks and idiots out there who think it's funny to do that kind of thing.
Now, I know looking at the front of your book, there appears to be what looks to me like a cross between a lion and a monkey of some sort. What the hell is this creature?
That's the Wampus cat.
Okay, now I've heard of Kitty Wampus, but I've never heard of the Wampus cat. What is that?
It's probably a Florida panther that is being mistaken identity type thing. Some people say it has six legs as opposed to four. Looks a little bit like a lion with a mane, although I've never seen a Florida panther with anything that pronounced, but it's probable or possible. Right. And you also have to remember, we've got the problem down here of Florida was a roadside circus state for years.
Sure.
Until they started putting a lot of license requirements on it. And many of these animals, when the circuses failed, they just let them loose. So God knows what the devil's out there. We've got problems with monkeys attacking people in Silver Springs.
There you go, Tim. You wanted a monkey, go to Silver Springs, Florida.
Yes.
They got a few down here if you want to trap them.
Yeah.
We had 19 Pattis monkeys escape from a facility near us in Lakeland a couple of years back. Actually, I had to laugh. They wouldn't listen to anybody about how to capture them. They finally picked them up after about a year of trying and got them all. But, that could have been a major disaster.
What kind of Padus monkeys, what were they, what are they, and what were they being used for?
They were being bred, as a thing for one of the zoos locally. And they got loose off the island that they were being put on, thinking that they wouldn't swim, and apparently they do. And basically, they're the greyhound of the monkey species. They can run like hell on land, and really, they spread out pretty good. And we've got the green swamp here, which is miles and miles and miles and miles and miles of vacant land that is essentially watershed and state park. So things get in there, and they're going to disappear.
Yeah, monkeys, wild monkeys, Tim. Wild monkeys.
I'll trap them with love, Dave.
No. You know what you don't run into in Minnesota, Tim?
Monkeys?
Thunderbird, flying pterodactyls, chupacabras, mangy-looking monkey lions, black panthers, giant alligators, Tim. You don't run into those. They don't exist in Minnesota.
Yeah, but Yeti. you do have wild kangaroos.
What?
Yep, supposedly there are kangaroos sighted up there from time to time.
What? Wait, we live in this state, Scott. What drugs are you on? Has flak made its way into your life now?
No, I don't do things like that.
Uh-huh, Scott. All right, so you've got another beastie on the cover of your book here that looks like a plesiosaur. What exactly is this? And
that refers to an attack that occurred to a gentleman and his young friends by the name of McCleary. Mm-hmm. Up in the Panhandle in 1963. That's the animal that he reported attacked them and killed four of his companions. It was probably actually a bull shark. But they insisted that this thing had a large bulbous turtle-like head on a 12-foot neck like a telephone pole. Well, it would have to, plesiosaur is actually probably not right because that's not in the fossil record and it's in the States. Around here we had elasmosaurs, but they didn't have a bulbous head. They had an elongated alligator-like head, only smaller. And if one survived, it's possible. There's lots of things out there we can't explain, and some of them are just enormous in size. But this was by the wreck of the Massachusetts near Pensacola, Florida.
And how many people have witnessed this thing?
He was the only survivor.
Oh.
They found the bodies. This Mr. McCleary was the only one who survived.
So that was kind of a one and a done attack.
Yeah. Well, spending the night hanging on to a buoy in the middle of the sound in order to avoid being eaten by this thing. I can kind of relate. But they have attacks, with bull sharks and things here around the state constantly. So more than likely, if anything attacked them, it was a shark. But who's to say I wasn't there? But that the story is there, and it's an account. There's no physical evidence other than Mr. McCleary's sworn statements, which came about after the event. So take it for what it's worth.
The Native American cultures in these states where so many of these creatures exist, do we find documented proof of their tapestry, their artwork, anything like that, that shows what their people have believed in? And,
if you want to spend a lot of time going through, museums like the one down there at the Atatiki Museum in the Everglades, you'll find some interesting pieces. For the most part, things like the swamp ape, they won't talk about because they think it's bad luck to discuss it. But every now and then you'll run against people like Mama Bear or a couple of the storytellers that are around either North Florida or South Florida. And they'll talk pretty frankly about it, at least privately. But, you know, they've got to get to the point that they trust you, and they, you know, then you know, there are also jokers out there that'll like to pull your leg and tell you a tall yarn. That's been part of Florida since they made campfires. So, you know, it's just the way it is.
How do you go about when you're researching these claims and talking to them? And I know you wrote a book regarding interviewing cryptid witnesses. How do you go about really kind of dipping through the BS, the bull shark of it all, and getting to the real story and if these people are legitimate or not?
Well, some of it starts with finding something like the artifact you're talking about and then asking questions without making them leading questions, so you get, you know, the answers that you should get, not the ones you want to get.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people who just come forward and say, hey, this happened. And you go in and you use forensic technique to talk to them to get the entire story. And then you begin at the beginning and start checking things out.
Do you find that most people that claim to witness these creatures are, at least in their estimation, telling the truth? Or do you find that into a lot more hoaxers?
Well, the hoaxers you can usually tell because they can't keep their lies straight. But, the people who are honest, most of these people have seen something. They may misattribute it, and it's most likely, and you'll find out that it's an animal that they simply don't understand or they've confused. And a good example of that is the, quote, sea monster. Did you ever see the episode that I did with Ed Batuk for Monster Quest on the sea monster in Lake Worth down near Palm Beach?
No, I didn't. Please tell us about that.
All right, well, that's a classic example. This guy for several years photographs this thing that, you know, looks like a sea monster off an old map, old mariner's map from, you know, the 16th century, you know, down in Lake Worth in a particular area at a particular time of the year. And we were called in. Ed Patuk is a marine biologist, now retired, used to be at Florida Atlantic, and myself. To try to identify the animal. And we go through hours and hours and hours of videotape. And, you get a one-second view out of all of that that you can look at and say, I know what that is. That's a pinniped. That's the head of a seal. All right, but the rest of the animal doesn't look like a seal. And then you start doing some thinking and realize that what you're seeing is a composite of two animals. The trident tail was a damaged manatee that was swimming along with the seal. And since they surfaced at different times but had similar body shape and color, everybody was confusing them and making one animal out of them.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we correctly identified that it was a pinniped. We misidentified the species of pinniped, but we correctly identified that that's what it was. And the manatee... And, of course, we got all kinds of hate mail because you can't believe the number of people out there. It's almost a religion with cryptozoology. If you challenge their delusions, they come out of the woodwork to crucify you.
Scott, we've been doing this show for 12 years. We can imagine it perfectly. Whenever we challenge a guest or the theories, man.
The fastest
scary.
Way to get into an argument is to challenge the delusions of a delusional.
That is true. That is
and
true.
In any case, so we go through all of this, and then a couple of months later, a News 5 helicopter, doing a traffic report, is flying over the lagoon, and actually photographs and videotapes the seal from the helicopter. So we were proven correct about the seal, and then another year goes by, and we had a particularly very cold winter. And the manatee with the trident tail was then filmed, frolicking around in the warm water at the outtake by the power company. So, people put it together and, oh, my God, they were right. Well,
right.
That's what we do. That's why we're professionals.
You've got 23 different creatures you cover in this book. We've covered a handful of them. What are some of the more creepy creatures that that supposedly stalk, Florida?
Oh, let's see. We've got sharks that are so large that they're you would think that they're megalodons. I've been tailed on a fishing boat with one of those, and that was extremely creepy. We've got occasionally get reports, especially down in the Keys of and in the southern part of the state where the Everglades is, of these pterodactyl-like creatures. And sometimes they turn out to be something that is completely known and it becomes comical. Other times, they're pretty damn frightening.
Right, which is what we heard during our Theater of the Mind, these pterodactyl creature encounters. What do you make of that? I mean, obviously, it's something that freaks the hell out of people, and many people believe they are actually seeing this.
Well, the great frigate bird from Central America has a tendency to look in flight, especially at a distance, very pterodactylish. So it wouldn't be surprising that they would be blown off course enough that they would get, they would get to South Florida. So that could be one of them. I mean, one of the stories I tell in the book that's absolutely hilarious is I was called into a case by two legal beagles from Boston. And they were freaking out because they thought they had just bought a place down there that bordered on the swamp end of Palm Beach. And they were having problems because they were out at night and they'd see these things flying. They couldn't make them out from a distance because it was getting dark, and they were making these horrible calls that sounded like something out of a old dinosaur movie, Lost World. And I'm going down there with them, and we're sitting there talking, and I'm doing the interview and sipping on a mint julep. And that they had given me, and all of a sudden you hear this call in the background, and there it is, and I'm like, there's what, and there it is, that's the animal, that's the thing, that's its call. Hey guys, that's a sand crane.
Really, sand cranes sound that terrifying?
Well, they have a call that. If an audio engineer got a hold of it, could make it sound like something that belongs in Jurassic Park.
Very cool. Yeah, you're just giving me more and more reasons to never want to visit Florida again.
Oh, please. Actually, to tell you the truth, the only thing that worries me in Florida, the thing that terrifies me about mm-hmm. Florida, you couldn't see.
What is that?
Oh, freshwater amoebas that eat somebody's brain.
Right. Yeah. See, that's okay. The other stuff. Yep.
Bacterial infections that eat your limbs away. Those things scare the
Right.
That worries me a lot more than any of these cryptid creatures. They like to hide. Frankly, if I saw one, I'd want to hide too. So, no biggie. And, and I've seen a couple of them, as you know, and, I'm still here.
And what do you
recommend? I haven't had any chunks taken out of me or anything like that, but boy, I'll tell you, I've had some bad infections.
What do you make of that? For people that are interested in the cryptozoological field and putting themselves out there to investigate, is this something you think people should take a lot more consideration in doing before they put themselves out in the field?
Always, when you're out in the swamps and the forest, you should be constantly aware of your surroundings. And that's not a big deal. But I mean, you've got people out there that want to turn these things into horrible monsters that are bloodthirsty and are going to suck your blood and decapitate you or swallow you whole or whatever, and I got to laugh at them. Again, it's a Facebook thing that I'm constantly getting into arguments with people over these things. They're not monsters, they're animals. They do what they do.
Well, that's your take on it. I think they're beasts that are out to eat me. I don't have any other proof besides
If a lion gets hungry enough, it'll eat you.
Right.
If it's extremely well fed and you're alone with it, unless it happens to have a very nasty disposition, which can happen, you're going to ride it.
Right.
I mean, I've dealt with all kinds of animals. They don't scare me. My son has dealt with Robert in particular loves felines. He worked at did his animal internship at a feline center up in Pensacola. not Pensacola, excuse me, Panama City at Bear Creek Feline Center. Hi, Jim. In any case, the bottom line is he's worked with animals that are enormous. And not a problem. If they're not, I mean, if they are taken care of and they're well fed, they're not going to bother you. I had more problems with the little ones that were the size of a house cat than I've had with the big ones.
Yep, that's a fact. I mean, it's fascinating. I give a lot of credit to guys like you who will get out there and get your boots dirty and take a look at these claims, and I hope people will rethink it. Because, again, it's not so much the cryptos that are going to get you. It's the amoeba, the brain-eating amoebas and flesh-eating bacteria that you have to be careful of. And if it's not that, it's the morons on Flacca trying to eat your face. So be careful when you're out there. Scott, do you have any new books or programs we should be watching out for?
Actually, since I wrote Weird Monsters, I have taken a break. I haven't done anything since this fall. I'm going to probably start on a book this summer, but I haven't figured out exactly what I'm going to do yet. I've been toying with the idea, and I've got some people prodding me with a pitchfork saying, we need you to update Cryptid Creatures, but I hate doing revisions and then forcing people who have bought the book to go back out and buy the book again in order to get the new story. So, you know, but if I don't get enough to fill a book, I can't make a book out of it. So, I do have stories of new animals, and I do have things that I'm thinking about. Most of the articles that I'm trying to write now and doing on a relatively, you know, at least a quarterly basis are appearing in Cryptid Culture magazine. And I got one out there now. I did a piece. They asked me to look into some of the cryptid creatures at Disney World. So I did that story.
Wait, and actually, that's kind of cute. Wait a minute. Cryptid creatures at Disney. So you're saying this tongue-in-cheek, I'm guessing.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, dragons and stuff are cryptids, and Disney's got loads of that stuff in animation and otherwise. But actually, some former cryptids are there at Animal Kingdom. You know, the Komodo dragon's only been known for a little over 100 years, and they've got
that's
one
true.
There.
Sure.
You know, they've got the okapi. Everybody thought that was a joke. Nobody – what a cross between a zebra, a donkey, a giraffe, and a hyena, whatever. Hey, they got it. It's there. You know, there's the animal. Go take a look. The gorillas – the mountain gorilla, anyway, has only been known for a little over 100 years. They've got the eastern lowland, I think it is, over there, or western lowland, excuse me. And, you know, they're there. So, I mean, you know, and if you look everywhere and you look very carefully, it's like the hidden Mickeys. They've got cryptids all over the place. Not that they're there for real, but, if you want to go out there and have a couple of beers – And your kids are going to enjoy the rides and have a good time, and mom's going to shop, and you want to do something that's more fun for you, go out there and start looking for the cryptids that are hidden there among all the stuff.
I think if I'm in Florida and I'm enjoying the nice weather there, I'm going to just be enjoying the hot Disney princesses and miniskirts. That's what I'll be focused on. You can keep looking for the cryptids, Scott.
Oh well, let's face it. I have a pretty good time looking at the Disney princesses, but I get to see those a lot more frequently than you do. I mean, after all, he's in my backyard.
That's cool, Scott Marlowe. Thank you for joining us. The Cryptid Creatures of Florida. Everyone, have a long, safe, happy, healthy weekend filled with lots of love and laughter. We'll be back with you on Tuesday. But remember, in the interim, you can listen to me. I'll be hosting Coast to Coast AM tonight and tomorrow night. For more information, check out coasttocoastam.com. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. God bless. We'll talk to you again real soon.